Americans United for Life works every day to defend the human right to life in culture, law, and policy. And today, we get to see the fruit of our team and supporters' passionate, justified, righteous efforts. Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health is a case that has reached the Supreme Court because America is a place where all life should be embraced. For too long, the legal precedents of Roe and Casey have had a costly hold on American law, misrepresenting the beliefs of the majority of Americans and distorting our very own Constitution. This week, we get to witness history. I'm Anna Claire Noblet, and you're listening to Life, Liberty, and Law, brought to you by Americans United for Life. Welcome back to Life, Liberty, and Law. I am so excited to talk to Katie Glenn and Steve Aiden today. They are two great friends and just central players of our Americans United for Life team. So Katie and Steve, how are y'all doing today? It's a big week.
Yeah, great to be back in D.C. with a lot going on and good to see lots of friends who have traveled here for oral arguments and Dobbs.
It's a high-energy week, Katie, isn't it? And Anna Claire, I wish that you were in the nation's capital. I know you're busy studying, and I know you're doing well. But wow, there's a lot going on, and it's fantastic to be right in the middle of it.
Yeah, it's almost like a March for Life week or something. Obviously, this happens far less often than the March for Life, an opportunity to go and hear oral arguments in the Supreme Court that have such a big impact on the future of abortion policy and just the direction of our nation. So I'm glad y'all get to see all of kind of our colleagues and fellow pro-lifers up in D.C. this week. There's going to be rallies Wednesday morning. Everyone's going to be gathered on the Supreme Court steps, and I'm going to be excited to follow along and hear everything that's happening. So, Steve, for those of us who don't spend all day, you know, working on these cases, and both of you are working just on pro-life legislation all the time on our legal team, would you just give us a quick summary of what the Dobbs case is all about, just in case anyone has missed it?
I'd be happy to, Anna Claire. It's one of the most unique cases on abortion to come before the Supreme Court. It's really an outlier, a surprise to many people. Mississippi, several years ago, passed a law that prohibited abortion after 15 weeks gestation. That's the essence of it. It had many findings on the development of human life in the womb, the age at which babies in the womb can feel pain, obviously horrific pain on abortion, the danger of late-term abortion at that gestational age to women. So the facts were pretty extensive in the bill, and the summation of it was that it was time to put an end to abortion at that gestational age for the purpose of preserving and protecting human life, obviously, but also for the purpose of protecting women considering abortion. Predictably, the law was challenged in federal court in Jackson, Mississippi, by Jackson Women's Health Organization, which is the last abortion clinic in Mississippi. There used to be seven, and one by one they went down for nefarious reasons. Providers arrested, providers engaged in medical malpractice, just not a great record. Jackson Women's Health is the last clinic standing, and it's not a great place, believe me, and in many respects operates well below the standard of care for women. But they challenged it in federal court, and the federal judge in Jackson had really no problem holding that the law was unconstitutional, flatly saying that Roe and Casey prohibit any restriction on abortion before the age of viability, which is about 22 weeks. Went up to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals said the same thing, although there was a spirited and excellent dissent by Trump appointee, Jim Ho, who pointed out that Roe and Casey are hard to understand, inscrutable, and obsolete, all the things that we've been telling the Supreme Court for many years. Then the Mississippi Attorney General petitioned the case to the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court doesn't have to hear cases. It has it's in charge of its own docket. And so it sat on the case for almost a year, almost the entire last term, passing over it in conference 28 times. Everybody thought we were going to get a denial, and that probably somebody was working on a dissent from the denial, saying that it should have been taken, maybe Justice Thomas. But I think it surprised almost everybody when the court in mid-May this year finally took the case and pointed to one of the three questions presented and said, we only want to talk about this one question. And that question, which will be the subject of discussion tomorrow, is every pre-viability restriction on abortion unconstitutional? Because that's what Planned Parenthood versus Casey said in the 1990s, 1992. Every pre-viability restriction on abortion is unconstitutional under Casey. So this case gives the court the chance to overturn Roe because it's a direct challenge to Roe, but also, even if it doesn't overturn Roe, to take big chunks out of the awful abortion jurisprudence that Roe and Casey set up and to return to the states their rightful authority to legislate to protect human life. So that's what we're hoping and praying for.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge deal. And is that pre-viability line? I know it's shifting a lot. And at different points in history, viability has meant different things. What is that mark of viability right now that we're talking about?
Anna Claire, the concept of viability is, when can a baby live outside his or her mother's womb with or without medical assistance, right? The line of viability is supposed to have been shifting. Back at Roe, it was about 28 weeks, and now it's 22 weeks. But that's kind of a myth. It really hasn't been shifting. What's been shifting is the percentage of infants that can survive at a very early age. So even 20, 30, 40 years ago, you get reports of babies surviving outside their mother's wombs after difficult circumstances at a very early age, 22, 23, 24 weeks. It's just that with today's technology and thankfully perinatal care, many more babies are surviving outside the womb at that early precious age.
Right. Yeah, there was one in Birmingham just this fall, and he survived after being born at 21 weeks. So I guess the fifth, but in Mississippi, the law was banning abortion after 15 weeks. And so that's kind of the one in question here.
Yeah, clearly, with the medical science we have today, much too early, unfortunately, for babies outside the womb. So it's a direct challenge to the viability rule of Casey, which was arbitrary, really, to begin with. I mean, obstetrician gynecologists never used the viability concept in treatment. It was strictly made up by Justice Harry Blackmun in the Roe case as an arbitrary line to defend his views in Roe. So it's not okay. Really a concept in treatment. It's just a rather arcane concept in the law that even today feels artificial and arbitrary.
Right. Well, and even for those of us who live in states where after Casey, the court said, yes, you can limit abortion at viability. So a group of states rushed to pass, you know, laws at that viability line because they felt like that's as far as they could go. So for those of us who live in a state with a viability law, like I do in Florida, you know, we've got doctors and we've got pro-abortion activists who say they'll go on the record and say, I don't believe in viability. I'm willing to do abortions throughout pregnancy, or I think there should be abortions throughout pregnancy because viability isn't real. So we say viability isn't real in that it's a constantly changing standard that is always moving forward with advancing technology and doesn't take into account all of the other compelling interests that the state has that Steve, you know, laid out for you. But they think viability isn't real because they want to do abortion throughout pregnancy. So it's been a pretty useless standard as far as state laws, because it's up to the doctor who is financially incentivized to do this abortion to decide whether that child is viable. And in a lot of states, there's very little oversight over those doctors.
Yeah, great point.
Yeah, yeah. Katie, I know we've talked about the amicus curiae briefs that AUL's been working on. We've talked about that with you and Senator Lankford a few weeks ago. But how long has AUL been preparing for this case? And what have each of you been working on leading up to it?
Well, I would say 50 years, because when AUL was founded, its founders were speaking out against abortion and actively litigating against abortion in their home state of Illinois. So I think for our entire 50-year history, we have been working towards this moment. But as far as the Dobbs case itself, you know, like Steve said, this case was conferenced over and over and over, which means every time you see it, you know, just kind of move forward on the schedule and you wonder what's going on and you think, is somebody writing a dissent because they want to grant it? Like, why would they? We think it may have a record for one of the longest cases continuously conferenced. So somebody could fact check me on that.
Wow.
But then in May, you know, much to our surprise, I think, the case was granted. And so for us who write amicus briefs and who represent, you know, parties with an interest in the case, we immediately started counting on the calendar the number of days we had through the summer. Americans United for Life filed two briefs. So we wrote one on our own that our colleague Clark Forsyth, who has been in this fight longer than I've been alive, you know, really spearheaded, just taking direct aim at Roe and Casey and saying, this never worked. It doesn't work now. You can't fix it. You've got to overturn it. And then we wrote a second brief that we filed on behalf of 228 members of Congress that, you know, really went through those compelling interests that the state of Mississippi laid out. It talked about the significant increase in the dangers to the woman's health later in pregnancy. And those go up every single week. Once you hit 12 weeks, it just keeps increasing. We wrote about how frequently children with disabilities that are diagnosed in the womb end up being aborted, and how that type of eugenics is just so upsetting and the kind of thing that, you know, the state works to alleviate discrimination against people with disabilities in every other facet of life, except in the womb, where the courts have said that they can't because of this viability line. And states want to do that. Mississippi wants to do that. Other states want to do that. We also talked about what a 15-week dismemberment abortion is, how it rips the child limb from limb while they are alive, and just how degrading that is, because it takes medicine from a healing profession to a killing profession, and how the state of Mississippi is actually one of just a couple of states that has a law already prohibiting that type of abortion procedure that is currently in effect. And so realistically, this 15-week law was very much aligning with the laws that Mississippi already had on the books and serves the interests of the people of their state to not allow such a horrific procedure to take place. So we really dug into those. And for the first time, we had 231 members of Congress total, the 228 on our brief, and then three other members who filed separately, all say together in one voice, Roe has to go. And so previous pro-life briefs have not taken on that question quite so directly, because the court hasn't asked, you know, hasn't had this question in front of them quite so directly. So we felt that that was a huge moment to have so many members of Congress, and, you know, other briefs were filed on behalf of hundreds, if not thousands, of state lawmakers saying the same thing. Governors filed, state attorneys general filed, but so many of our government representatives from across this country saying in one voice, enough is enough. Like, we need to legislate this. Roe has to go. And so that we think was a huge, huge moment. And we hope the court listens.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for all of your work on that, Katie. And I know that's, what about you, Steve? How have you been preparing? I know you've been working on these briefs as well.
My answer is the same as Katie's. And I think the same answer that everyone at AUL would give you. We've been working on this for 50 years. The whole movement has been working on this moment for 50 years. And it's very gratifying to see this day tomorrow finally come. I have worked with the Mississippi Attorney General's office, both on and off briefs in different cases, for about 10 years. They are very able. They are very minded to do as much as they can to protect human life. And I commend them for that. One of the great things that we've seen in those 50 years is you go from a time at, in Roe versus Wade, which was, pretty discriminatory in some ways against women. Women were not able to access the corridors of power in the legal profession. And so you get the deputy DA of Dallas standing up to argue before the Supreme Court. And his opening line was, well, it's a difficult day in court when you have to argue against two pretty ladies. The joke went flat, but man, how far we've come. And more important than that is the fact that many state attorneys general's offices are now equipped to fight this fight with people who understand abortion jurisprudence, and they want to see Roe overturned. That's a huge sea change, and Mississippi has been in the forefront of that. So I've been honored to work with them in different capacities over the years. And in this case, as Katie said, we were honored to file those two briefs. We worked at enabling three or four other briefs that were filed by connecting people, by encouraging arguments, by assisting with even practical things such as, you know, formatting and how to file. So we were all very busy. The result was that over 80 briefs were filed on the pro-life side in this case. And so the court has a full panoply of arguments and viewpoints, facts and figures to go by. There's no question the court knows everything it needs to know in this case to decide that it's time to start protecting human life and to get out of the business of being the nation's abortion control board.
Absolutely. And we know those clerks and hopefully justices have read those briefs. And like you said, they have the facts. You've worked hard to give them everything they need for this case. So Katie, tomorrow, I know you'll both be out and our team and supporters will be holding signs and rallying support for these vulnerable Americans that we're speaking on behalf of. But tell us about the other group that will be out there with signs and just help us understand who, you know, who's on the other side of this case. We want to have, you know, a good understanding and some empathy for them. But what is the message of folks who are pro-abortion when it comes to this case?
Yeah, so we will not be the only people out on the courthouse steps tomorrow. I heard a rumor that they are expecting like 5,000 to 7,000 people total out there. So it's going to be really, really busy.
Wow.
And hopefully all very peaceful. But, you know, I think we do need to recognize that for a lot of the women who are going to be on the other side from us tomorrow, they genuinely feel like something's going to be taken away from them because that's what they've been told. They have been told that you need this to succeed, that it's a tool in your toolbox, that if you don't have access to abortion, if you don't have the right to get an abortion, if you get pregnant and you don't want to be, that you're not free, you're not equal to men. And I think this is such a destructive message that has been sold to, you know, women like you and I. We are the exact consumers that the industry is hoping to sell their product to.
Yeah.
As young women who are, you know, working towards our careers and active and busy, they're saying a baby would slow you down. A baby would get in your way. And that couldn't be further from the truth. But that is the line that has been sold now for over 50 years. That was really at the crux of the sexual revolution. And, you know, as Steve mentioned, the legal profession was very different 50 years ago than it is now. And we, as young women in particular, are by and large saying enough is enough. And I know Students for Life of America has some great polling data on that. They work with students all across the country who totally reject abortion. And so I want to like have empathy for women who have been sold this line, who have been told you need this. And so they do feel like something is being taken from them. I also want to have empathy for women who have had an abortion and who are suffering, you know, physical and physiological side effects of that, but also emotional trauma, which can come out years later. A lot of women talk about how they kind of just push it away and they put it out of mind. And then, you know, when they had a child years down the road, it sort of clicked and they felt like, I had a child before. Like, this is not my first child, in a way that, you know, they just really pushed it away. So that's the kind of thing that can come out well down the road. And so many of the people that we see who are angry and who are screaming and shouting, I think they're really coming from a place of pain. And so I hope that they do find healing and they get the resources to help them with that healing, because it's hard when you're told over and over, this is the solution to your problem, this is the easy way out, to not believe that.
Right.
And ultimately we know it's not true.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we see this as an opportunity. I want to encourage anyone who's listening, because it's so easy to see people on the other side of this issue as enemies, but you're so right that there's so much more to the story, and this is more of an opportunity not to degrade them further, but to affirm women's capability and the capability of parents and of families to embrace life instead of feeling like they have no other options and that they're not capable. So I think we really do have an opportunity there.
Well, and each of us, have the opportunity to be pro-life to the people around us. A lot of my friends will say things like, well, I know you and I know you care about women and I know you have a good heart. And, you know, I hope they have the charity to extend that to Steve, who they don't know, or any number of other pro-life people, to give, you know, everybody the benefit of the doubt, because they know somebody who they like and care about and respect who is pro-life. Over half this country is pro-life. And for the vast majority of people who say they're pro-choice, they don't believe in what Planned Parenthood and, you know, Democrats in Congress are saying, which is abortion on demand without limits. You know, Catherine, our boss, testified before Congress a couple of weeks ago on a panel with a doctor who said, abortion is a blessing. A blessing. That is not what most pro-choice people think. Most of them think that, you know, we should cut it off some point in pregnancy. A lot of people are very comfortable with 12 weeks or 10 weeks, which is earlier than Mississippi's law at 15 weeks, by the way, and certainly much more in line with the rest of the world. And a lot of them are very supportive of basic health and safety laws, of laws that protect those babies with Down syndrome and other genetic anomalies. You know, most people who are pro-choice are not with NARAL, with Planned Parenthood. You know, they're not saying
it's a blessing.
They're not saying it's a blessing. They're saying it's something that we sometimes need, not something we should be celebrating or shouting on the courthouse steps. Mm-hmm. So I think we really need to remind ourselves as we engage with the people in our lives who might be, you know, pro-choice, that there's a lot more common ground and a lot more opportunity to speak to them and shift their hearts towards where we are at and the truth that we know that is that child is a human person who cannot be replicated, duplicated, has unique DNA, and is worthy of dignity and life. We can help get them there if we know that they are not the angry, screaming people on the steps.
Mm-hmm. And that they are also, they all have the same dignity and unique worth. Yeah,
exactly.
I know Catherine, our president and CEO, she really embraces this message because she's been in the shoes of someone who has been sold a lot of abortion lies. And so I'm curious. I know that she's going to be speaking at a rally hosted by the state of Mississippi the morning of the hearings. Steve, I'm assuming you might have been kind of prepping with her for this. Do you know what Catherine's primary message is going to be on behalf of AUL this week?
Yeah, actually I do. It's a powerful message of hope and really uplifting those who are there by saying that Mississippi has taken the lead to uplift women, that we don't need abortion to, women don't need abortion to succeed, to uplift the dignity of lives in the womb. And importantly, that it's time for the killing to end. Let's call a spade and say that the Supreme Court has licensed the killing of human beings in the womb for nearly 50 years, and it's time for that to stop. So I'm looking forward to hearing it, and I know that the crowd will be enthusiastic in their support, both of her and of Mississippi, as they argue the case.
Yeah, absolutely. I know something I love about AUL is that we have such a unique position in these legal battles, but really the message of our organization and that Catherine gets to speak over and over again represents such, like you said, Katie, a majority of Americans who recognize the human right to life. So it's a, we're a small group, but I think her message will really resonate with a lot of people and hopefully start conversations around the country this week. Steve, after, you know, being right in the middle of this fight for so long, how emotionally are you feeling about this week, and what could both outcomes, kind of positive and negative from our point of view, mean for the future of our nation?
Anna Claire, it's overwhelming. I long to see those words written in ink on a page. Roe versus Wade is hereby reversed. I don't know what I'm going to do. I likely will dissolve in tears. I mean, imagine if you're Thurgood Marshall and you see the words on the page many years ago, separate is not equal. Or if you're Ronald Reagan and you have Mikhail Gorbachev saying that the Soviet Union is standing down and will disarm. The Cold War is over. It's on that level. It's a lifetime of hope and dream and work for the whole movement. And it's a moment that we have been waiting for decades. It's a moment whose time has come, and we are earnestly praying and hoping that we will see that that moment take place when the court issues its decision sometime next summer. Even if the court doesn't come out and overturn Roe versus Wade in those words, we believe that the case, the result, the decision will signal much more authority for the courts to regulate abortion. It's hard to conceive that this court would reaffirm once again that there is a fundamental right to abortion in the Constitution. Hard to conceive of that. The court is going a different direction, especially with the recent additions. And we believe that the court, the majority of the court, understands it's time for the court, the Supreme Court, to get out of abortion politics, to get away from these contentious, character-destroying nomination hearings over abortion, and to allow the states to get back to what the states were supposed to do in our federal system, which is decide how to protect human life, whether it's women considering abortion or the lives in their wombs. So it's a wonderful day tomorrow, and it's a year of expectant waiting, hoping, and praying until next summer when we hear what the court will do.
Yeah. And I think it just could really be a pivot in the hearts and minds of American people too. You know, whatever happens, like you said, the coverage that this case is getting and just the conversations that it's beginning in homes and workplaces and among friends all across the country and the world, really, that's what we're hoping for as well, just for hearts and minds to understand the gravity of what these laws determine, which is the outcome of life or death outcomes. Yeah, it's a big deal. Katie, walk us through what happens after this. I know we were saying that we're going to be waiting until the summer, but is it all speculation until then? I know you're going to be briefing some Hill staffers this week, preparing them to help their members of Congress communicate to their constituents about what's coming. But where do we go from here, and what are you going to be up to?
Well, all of us will be trying to read the tea leaves what the justices talk about during oral arguments, the kinds of questions they ask, what they seem most interested in. You know, I think there will be a lot of trying to dissect the meaning and lots of parlor games here in Washington as far as guessing who will write the opinion, when we'll get it, all of that stuff. So I don't anticipate that going away until we get an opinion, probably in June of 2022. But, you know, in the meantime, there is a ton of work to be done here in D.C. We are running up against another budget cliff this week on Friday, and keeping the Hyde Amendment into all of the federal appropriations so that the American people, through their taxpayer dollars, are not paying for abortions is huge. So that we'll be really focused on that. And then, you know, in January, we'll go straight into state sessions. And the message that we've been conveying to state lawmakers is now is not the time to wait and see. Use this year to continue the work that was done in 2021, where almost 100 pro-life laws were passed in like half the states. So this is not, you know, Arkansas, which is number one on our most pro-life list, passed 15 laws, but 23, 24 other states also passed laws. So this is not something that's happening in a few places. It's happening in lots of places. And we're getting tons of outreach from pro-lifers in blue states who are saying, what can we do? You know, we've got a Democrat governor. How can we work with them? And we're really excited to tackle that challenge. So we will be encouraging state lawmakers and governors to just really think bigger than they felt that they could because of Casey. Because if the court next June, you know, gets this out of their way and says, like, state lawmakers, you're up. You have the authority to regulate this issue. What are you going to have in place? What will the law look like in your state? That is more important than it has ever been. And certainly something we were sort of talking about when I started AUL 2.5 years ago, and is the number one thing we're going to be talking about in 2022.
Right. That's so exciting. And I hope that they do rise to the challenge there and are ready if the best case scenario happens. We're going to wrap up today with a shot of gratitude like we always do. So Steve, what is something that you're grateful for today? I know we're coming off of Thanksgiving, so it shouldn't be too hard.
It's not, Anna Claire. I am so grateful for all the truth tellers in the pro-life movement, for every woman that's endured an abortion like our president, Catherine Glenn Foster, and is telling the truth about what abortion really is and does to the woman and to the baby. Grateful for every sidewalk witness and 40 Days for Life, who've told the truth to women considering abortion. Grateful for every lawyer that has ever argued in court or in a law review article about the truth of abortion. So there's a great need for truth. Without truth, you're walking around in a fog of delusion. And so hopefully tomorrow, that fog will be dispelled and the court will see abortion for what it really is. And we'll get a decision next year that says the court has finally ended it. So that's why I'm grateful.
Great. What about you, Katie?
Well, I know we've been talking a lot about abortion because this huge case is right in front of us, but I'm super grateful. I got to go home for Thanksgiving and meet my brand new nephew who was 8 weeks old. And I got to love on him and hold him. But I also got to spend time in person, not through a window, with my grandmother, who's in her 80s. And so really thinking about, you know, just getting to spend so much time with my family, some of whom are at the very beginning of life, some of whom are closer to the end, was just such a blessing. And after, you know, so much time of us staying apart and distance, it was really wonderful to get to hug my grandma and really kind of reflect on what matters the most. And that is all the people in our lives.
Yeah, man, life is so beautiful at every stage. I am grateful also for time with family. And I think of a friend who is here at school with me, and she spends a lot of her time counseling young moms who come into our crisis pregnancy center here in town. And she's still a student, but she has risen to the challenge to give her time away to those women who are often our age. And she's really inspired me. And I'm really grateful for people who have been in this fight for years at the local level and state level, and then all the way up to everyone who's going to be outside the steps tomorrow. So thankful for her and for that example, and excited to see what happens. So thank you both so much for coming on today. And I know you're busy, and we've got a million different events in DC this week. So I'll let you go run to those and keep doing your thing. But thank you again so much for joining us. And we will talk to you soon when we have some more to speculate on. So thank you guys so much. Have a great day. Have a great
day. Thanks, Anna Claire.
Thanks, Anna Claire. God bless.
If you enjoyed the show, please give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review wherever you listen, and tell a friend about us. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, drop us an email at life@aul.org. You can also find tons of resources about Dobbs and other issues at aul.org. I'm Anna Claire Noblet. Until next time, thanks for listening to Life, Liberty, and Law and supporting Americans United for Life.